Welcome to the Physics Teaching Podcast, the podcast for teachers of physics made by physics teachers.
Yes, welcome to the Physics Teaching Podcast. My name's Thomas WP, a part-time A-level only, well, A-level mostly teacher of physics. I do a bit of Year 7 science.
And I'm Robin Griffiths, and I'm a full-time teacher of physics, teach Years 8 through to 13.
So what have we got in store today? We're sort of tidying up a few loose ends today, but we will finally get on to our CLEAPS interview.
Yeah, absolutely. CLEAPS, CLEAPS, CLEAPS.
All that will be answered in the interview segment.
Because that's the most important question, I feel.
And I've been getting it wrong for years. Before we start, I just want to thank Stuart Farmer.
Yeah, Most importantly,
Stuart Farmer, thank you for the jam. This apparently was given to Robin in August and was handed over to me today as we're doing another face-to-face podcast. So thank you very much. Had a little taste. Yummy. Very, very nice.
Yeah, Stuart, I've got to say, the blackcurrant jam is absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for that. That's the most important bit of the podcast, obviously, we're putting up front there.
But Good stuff. So the next thing to tidy up is Charlie Gilbank. Charlie, the non-specialist, has been teaching forces with Year 7. He's a PE teacher. He sent us some audio before the Ways to Teach ionizing radiation episode, but we completely forgot to put it in. Then last week we got all excited because of Andy. So here is Charlie's last missive.
Hi, Physics Teaching Podcast. Charlie here. And this evening I'm live at the Olympic Velodrome. And looking around, there seems to be quite a lot of physics going on here with the way that they ride around this track without falling off. In between races, I'm finalising my planning for my lesson tomorrow, Gravitational Forces at a Distance. Thank you for all the fantastic ideas. We will be having our magnets out, we'll be having our paper clips out, and I've designed a Jupiterscope, which is looking at the gravity on Jupiter, so thank you for all of that. Nice little touch this week as well, when I went out to watch some of my students playing in a rugby match, and one of my physics students shouted to me, "Sir, we're going to win today because we have gravity on our side." So hopefully something's sticking from what I'm teaching them. Signing off.
When I had students who would tell me, "I can't do physics, there's no way I can do physics," you know, that mental block that you hit with physics, and I guess maths teachers must see this as well, of, "I can't do this, there's no way you can persuade me I can do this." I used to say, well, you can catch a ball, so therefore at some level you understand how projectiles work. You kick a football, at some level you understand how forces work. And I would go through it, and it's lovely to hear that Charlie's sort of getting gravity on their side in the football game. Great.
Brilliant.
Yes, I think I'd have preferred it if they said we've got momentum on our side. But having started to teach the forces module, it's not mentioned, so I think we'll let him off.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, it's the force due to gravity on his side, isn't it, really? You know, but
And I like the idea of the Jupiterscope, which I guess came from the Moonoscope that we mentioned the other week. And I guess he's worked out the weight on Jupiter and changed the scale on a Newton meter. So that's excellent. Brilliant.
I love that.
And funnily enough, I bumped into the head teacher this week on the corridor, and he was walking down the road clutching a big plastic bag under one arm, and on the other arm he had a bagatelle, you know, where you push the stick and the ball bearing pings off the nails. He said, Thomas, guess what I'm teaching? I said, it's got to be lesson one of forces.
This is great. I love the way you've basically got every member of your SLT at your school teaching physics. Is this because you're haranguing them mercilessly, or
I think Charlie's a bit of a champion for the podcast and definitely passed the podcast under the head, but I think it's a sad sign of the times that we just are very short of teachers and science teachers in this country, and our wonderful senior management team are stepping up. PE teacher and a geographer. Although the geographer, the head teacher, does have a physics A level.
Yeah, it is important. So yeah, remember, dear listener, you are an important person, a very important person, and a rare person. Look after yourself, because this time of year is the time when people really should be thinking, making sure that you're okay, making sure that you're keeping going. I think I always found kind of the middle of this half term and the middle of the next half term as being quite tough times. So yeah, sort of listen to the podcast, we'll gee you up.
Yeah, this sounds always very long, isn't it? But we're getting there. This is mid-November, so we're getting there.
Absolutely, yeah.
And just a final update from Charlie. I think we'll try and get him on at some point. He I saw him the other day, and he has finished forces, so we won't be getting any more messages from him, and he's starting chemistry, which will be a different challenge for him, which all games are supporting with. And the enthusiasm Charlie has for it is infectious. I'd love to be in his class. You know, he loves teaching, and he's getting a real buzz out of, you know, throwing himself into science. A non-specialist, it can be done.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny because the Royal Society of Chemistry, who are genuinely lovely people and based not far away from where we record our podcast, are equally keen to promote their subjects being taught by non-specialists to make sure that those folks feel that they are being supported and that there's plenty of things going on. And they've just launched their new website, the Teach Chemistry website, so go and have a look, because there's bags and bags of resources there. So they're good folk too. We do love the chemists.
We do. Because it's just applied physics, isn't it, really?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, it's applied physics, because they just specialised in the electron, don't they, really? That's chemistry. Just specialised in the electrons.
I do remember, actually, there was a student who I think we both taught, and we should get on the podcast, because Nicola is somebody we taught, so I hope she doesn't mind us taking her name in vain. But she studied chemistry at university, and I remember telling her, well, if you go and study chemistry, you know, you're just going to be doing 3 years of basically solving Schrodinger's equation and all sorts of stuff like that in physical chemistry. So, yeah, you really should do physics, because at least you get to learn about stars then. And yeah, went and did chemistry, and then sort of bumped into her a few years later. Oh, yeah, there was a lot of physics in there.
Yeah. I think chemistry is a fascinating subject. I kind of missed out on it. I was not inspired by my GCSE or my O-level teaching and dropped it, didn't do the A-level. And looking back, I think I'd, if I had my time again, I'd try and do a chemistry A-level, because I've learned a lot about it. This is someone who started teaching science and did not understand the periodic table when I started teaching science, amazingly.
I think it's one of those things that we obviously, with the physics teaching podcast, we do talk about physics, but every time you teach a subject that you wouldn't identify as your specialism, do remember that you, as far as the kids are concerned, are the representative of that subject. So if your first thing out of your mouth as you go into that room is, oh, I never really liked chemistry at school, you've immediately just turned 30 kids off that. And that's a hell of a responsibility, but a heavy one, but a joyful one as well, as Charlie's showing.
It is. It's joyful. And certainly I have taught many topics in physics as well, where I'm a page ahead. And I'm literally study the double page spread when I'm planning the lesson and go in and teach it as if I know what I'm talking about, and on we go. We've talked about doing an episode on imposter syndrome, haven't we? But I'm not sure how we would do that. But
Everybody has it, yeah. And it's so damaging, and it eats away at people's confidence, and it's not discouraged enough, I think we could say. Mm. You know, people should address it more, I think. So maybe an episode on imposter syndrome later in the year, who knows?
Yes. Now, the next thing we want to tidy up is ways to teach ionizing radiation, partly because we had two suggestions that we missed, and partly because we had one come in afterwards that we wanted to talk about. So the first thing is Diddy Poe on Twitter. That's Diddy_Poe1612. Thank you very much for your suggestion of ways of describing the types of radiation. So imagine you've eaten too much at an all-you-can-eat buffet. You've eaten too much, so you're an unstable nuclei. And how are you going to make yourself feel better? You've got to lose something. So if you burp, that's gamma, I guess, because that's...
So are you waiting for me to do sound effects at this point?
No, sure. No. Oh, okay, no. Fair. So if you burp, that's gamma. I'm guessing that's, you know, low or zero mass. and for beta... beta, you have a little poo. And for alpha, you have a bit of vomit. No, maybe not the most accurate way of saying it, they say, but the kids do remember it, so we like that.
Yeah, it's not exactly the Archers, this, is it? I mean, anyway, never mind.
No. And Diddy Poe also says dismantling a smoke alarm grabs attention.
Absolutely. No, that's a good one as well. And on a similar theme, on the teaching ionizing radiation, thanks very much to John Hamilton for getting in touch. John said, firstly, keep up the good work with the podcast. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
I know plenty of folk, myself included, who benefit from your chats and discussions. I've corresponded before about various bits and pieces, and I moved at the start of this firm. He's now teaching in London. Anyway, he says... And this is part of a mea culpa for not contributing to your ways to teach. Don't worry, John. That's often the way it happens. Don't worry. I did find myself harumphing at some of your discussions. He harumphed. Ooh. Thomas, we've made John harumph.
We've made
sorry for making
to harumph.
Yeah, and to be fair, you're absolutely right, John, because he goes on to say, to be specific, there's quite a lot of talk about how to point the sources downwards versus the lab next door, etc., etc. Questions for the class, he said. After going through the basic properties of radiation, which source might this matter for? And it's a gamma, presumably. And what does it take to actually stop gamma? And then you sort of say other questions you can ask, how big is the source holder, what's it made of, this sort of thing. And what effect is the source holder actually going to have on the gamma radiation? He's making a really good point here, that those source holders are made out of what? I mean, a couple of millimetres of...
aluminium?
Stainless steel.
Probably stainless steel,
yeah. Maybe something like that. And of course, that's not going to stop any gamma radiation really in a meaningful way. And you can do this. If you get the gamma source in your school and you keep it in the box, which is lead-lined and all the rest of it, and you point the Geiger counter at it, it has a pretty high count rate when you hold the Geiger counter near to it, basically because the gamma goes through pretty much everything.
Yeah, and in any direction. And I tested this. Mm. And he goes on to say, doesn't he, this is why we have the cupboard in the middle of nowhere in the room in a remote location. And in my school, the cupboard is actually on the back of a wall that backs onto a lab. And I've gone and tested the background at the back of the lab. And it's 50% up on anywhere else in the school, which is not negligible on a normal count, but it's noticeable.
Yeah.
And I think, go on.
Well, he makes the point also that you can actually demonstrate this with the source. So you can put the source in the, and you can move the Geiger counter all the way around it, and you will see very little change in the reading as you go around it. And of course, then you can also demonstrate the inverse square law, because you can double the distance and note that the count drops by a quarter and so on and so forth.
Yes, and I think I might use that with my upper sixth. They have to do the inverse square law for their required practical. I might just get them to do it not facing the face of the cup source, just any direction, just see how that goes.
And I suppose the inverse square law that we talk about glibly here, if anybody's not familiar with it, because it tends to crop up at A-level more than at GCSE, is the idea that these things spread out as if they're on the surface of an ever-expanding sphere. And the surface area of that sphere is proportional to the square of the radius. So therefore, the intensity of the radiation decreases with the inverse of that square.
And for the non-specialist out there who found that a bit highbrow, look up the Butter Gun YouTube.
Yeah.
The Butter Gun demo is just, I show it every year when I'm teaching inverse square law. Absolutely brilliant. I want a Butter Gun.
Absolutely. Not least also, because I don't know who it was. If anybody knows who did the Butter Gun that you find on YouTube, because he is wonderful, because there is that beautiful sort of slightly understated flat voiceover that just really makes it, which I think is just lovely.
And what do you mean, makes it?
I think it's just really...
Isn't it real? Are you suggesting it's made up?
Okay. Yeah, he really did develop a Butter Gun.
What's really impressive about the Butter Gun on the low-res YouTube video is the Butter Gun even fakes spread marks from the knife.
Yes.
It's amazing.
It's incredible, isn't it? I love the way also that he religiously sort of missed with a bit as well.
Yeah.
It's kind of, anyway, have a look at the Butter Gun.
The Butter Gun.
Very, very worthwhile
for
inverse square law.
We'll definitely put a link in the show notes if you can't find it. But I think if you go to YouTube and just Google the Butter Gun inverse square law, you'll find it.
Anyway, thanks ever very much for John Hamilton for getting in touch and pointing out, of course, that gamma really isn't stopped by very much apart from meters of concrete or tons of lead, as he puts it. And so therefore, you're going to see very, very little. And it matters very little in terms of where you're pointing the source in your lab, because the gamma is omnidirectional.
Yes, and if anyone's worried, when I did the background count at the back of the lab, it was the GMG pressed against the wall, so it's close till I get to the source, which is at the back of the cupboard, and there's a bench in the way, and then a gap, and then they sit about 3 metres away, and the background count there is fine.
Yeah, absolutely. But,
right, the next thing is we've been contacted by Lewis Matheson, he of GCSE Physics Online and A-Level Physics Online, and friend of the podcast. We had him on episode 24. Now, Lewis has an offer for listeners of the Physics Teaching Podcast. He has started GCSE Physics Online, and he is trying to promote it. And we're not getting any payment for this. We're doing this because we love Lewis, and he's a friend of the podcast. So a little bit about GCSE Physics Online. He says he's currently got...
He's got 329 videos, I think.
Is that just from memory? Wow. That's, you're amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Just from memory, and the fact that I've got the email up in front of me.
But, oh, right, okay.
Yeah. My GCSE physics website is getting there. 329 videos on the site, many more planned.
Yeah, and he has made a user. So if you log on with username tptp@gcsephysicsonline.com and use the password tptp, you get full access to the GCSE Physics Online content until Christmas, until the 20th of December. And he... he's very keen for people to see that, see what he's doing, and maybe if you're interested, you could sign up for a registration for the rest of the year.
Yeah, and if you're interested in getting in touch with Lewis for this or indeed any of his other videos, anything like that, he's lewis@gcsephysicsonline.com. That's lewis@gcsephysicsonline.com.
And he says for a one-off fee of a mere £150, you can get access to those videos for the whole school for the rest of the academic year.
Absolutely. Hopefully we'll get Lewis on chatting about them at some stage as well.
Some of his Lego models now are getting pretty complex. Have you seen his Lego nuclear power station?
I haven't seen his Lego nuclear... there we go, that's my Sunday sorted.
So thank you very much for that, Lewis, and I hope people find that useful. Now, finally, onto the main body of the podcast, which is my chat with Cleeps.
Cleeps.
Exactly. I think we'll sort that out now. So I spoke with Samir from Cleeps about who Cleeps are, what they do, and how we pronounce it.
Okay, so my name's Samir, and I am the physics advisor at Cleeps.
That's my first question. How do you pronounce the name of this organisation? I left teaching for a few years, and when I returned to it, my school sent me to a course at your organisation. I swear they called it CLEAPS. I've called it CLEAPS my whole career, but you call it CLEAPS.
Yeah, I called it CLEAPS too. I think the first half of my interview, I kept referring it as CLEAPS as well. So it is CLEAPS, but we don't mind.
I'm gonna have to struggle hard to call it CLEAPS.
Yeah.
So, first things first, could you please explain to our listeners, as many in the UK will know all about CLEAPS, but our listeners abroad probably won't be familiar with it. It's CLEAPSS. So what is the role of CLEAPS?
So we assist schools in England, Wales and Northern Ireland on practical work in science. So that would be giving health and safety advice, to recommending various practicals to do at various times in the curriculum, running training courses, producing guidance. Recently, we've been producing lots of YouTube videos, which have been very popular. But essentially, our goal is to promote safe, practical work in science.
Yes, and that's my interaction with CLEAPS over the years, is how do we do this practical safely? And when I returned to teaching and went on this course, the first question they asked me is, there's a lot of rumours about CLEAPS. How many practicals have we banned in the last 20 years? And everyone sort of went, 25, 62. And someone said, one. And it was something like inhaling benzene through a straw or something. So I feel very strongly about how helpful and useful CLEAPS are encouraging practical work. And we'll talk about the vacuum cannon in a bit, but there's something you do, I know, about assisting with design of labs and the fittings for the labs. And I think one of our listeners asked, "What is there a list somewhere of all the equipment I need when I'm setting up a physics department from scratch? Is that something you can help with?"
There are lists, and there are various files which we have, which will help people in such a position setting up a lab for the first time. But since we are a membership organisation, we would ask for the school to call or email in so we can help them with that. But my colleague Matt Endine does a lot of work with lab design and various fixtures to avoid, etc. But yeah, that's something which we do work on.
Yeah, so call your friendly CLEAPS rep, I guess, if you're in that situation. So on to encouraging practicals and the vacuum cannon. You call it the ping pong cannon. It's a great example of a practical that I'd never heard of until a listener, Patrick Kaplow, told us about it. Thought it was wonderful. And there are many practicals, I would think, that are on the CLEAPS website and many beyond that that CLEAPS know about. So my question here is, how can CLEAPS support people in performing and finding out about these practicals? And follow-up question, are CLEAPS the keeper of the practicals so that as people retire who knew all the practicals and people come in who don't know all the practicals, is CLEAPS a resource for that?
Well, we're not the keeper of the practical. Just some backstory with this, with the ping pong cannon. It was actually a helpline who alerted me to this practical. So they called in and they sent me a YouTube video and said, "Look, we would like to do this practical. Is it safe?" And at that point, this would have been a couple of years ago, I had no idea if it was safe or not. We need to do this for ourselves. So often what would happen, somebody would call in with a practical idea they have seen on YouTube or elsewhere on the internet. And if it does look like it's something which is possible to do in schools, we will then do the practical, figure out all the hazards, how to mitigate against these hazards, write the guidance. And that's exactly what happened with the ping pong cannon. So whilst we aren't the keeper of practicals, we our methods are tried and tested to work, and they are safe as well.
Yeah, you're very much a wonderful resource for health and safety, particularly, the HAZ cards are brilliant. And I don't know if everyone will know about those, but any chemical you use in the lab, you've got the HAZ card. It tells you what is safe for which age group of children, what the hazards are. They're an absolutely brilliant resource.
Thank you.
So you're not the keeper of the practicals, yet on your website you have the practical procedures for biology, chemistry and physics. So are you telling me that those are things that people have contacted you about and you have determined a safe and reliable way of doing it?
Well, not all of them. The vacuum cannon was one example. Some of these ideas are our own. They were our own ideas, which we have thought of. All the advisory staff here are all ex-science teachers who are deeply passionate about the subject and the practical work that happens within the subject. So, for instance, I personally have developed a few activities using the Arduino microcontroller platform, which at the time of writing, I did not see elsewhere on the internet. And this was a means of schools to be able to do class sets of practicals because, data logging equipment, light gates, for example, or various sensors are very expensive and with Arduino can be made for a few pounds. So, not all of the ideas are, external. A lot of them are our own ideas, but there do exist some great ideas out there. And if people want to know whether or not this is something that should be done in schools, they should just contact us and we will investigate. And if it can't be done, we will think of ways or alternatives which will fit the bill.
Yeah, I want to congratulate you on that Arduino stuff because I saw that just recently. One of our listeners had made a light gate. I've got Arduino kicking around the house. I used to play with them just for fun. Famously made a brew controller that controlled the temperature of my beer homebrew.
Brilliant. That's brilliant.
I looked up that light gate. I think it's a great idea. And I think you'd use an Arduino Nano, don't you? So you can get an Arduino Nano very cheaply on eBay. You can put a little display on it, and if you can solder, which is my Achilles heel, you can put together a really nice self-displaying light gate. You can make a pressure sensor, and it is very cheaply. I think perhaps we might do an episode on this in the podcast on fooling around with the Arduino to make equipment.
Yeah, it's very cheap and it's very powerful. And we're scratching the surface with what even a nano can do, because only using one of the six analog pins with the pressure sensor, for example, there's six analog pins and there's 13 digital pins. We're not even utilizing it to its full capabilities. So a long-term goal of mine is to make a kind of platform, a data logging platform using this Arduino. So one Arduino would be able to do multiple experiments, if that makes sense.
What a nice job to have. Well, I'm conscious of taking too much of your time, and I think you've given us a very good summary of what CLEEPS, I've been really struggling to say that, what CLEEPS can do.
Yeah.
So I won't take up any more of your time. I think the Arduino stuff is worth an episode on its own, so you may get a call down the line if I manage to make one of these things.
Sure.
But thank you very, very much for your time. So that listener I mentioned twice there is Jonathan Shaw, who went into teaching an NQT at 50, which is another episode we did. I'm not going to look it up. Jonathan is in a school setting up a lab, and he asked me for those lists. So, Jonathan, you have your answer there. But Jonathan also has been making and tweeting the Arduino stuff, and he tweeted a picture of his Arduino light gates and said he can now do the gravity from free fall experiment. And they look... I hope you don't take this the wrong way, they look Heath Robinson, and I think that is the nature of Arduino. But I know Arduino Nanos are really cheap, like £2 or £3.
Yeah.
And if you've got the time to knock them into something that makes behaves like gate, you're saving hundreds and hundreds of pounds.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a great thing. And also one of those things that you could see an electronics club at the school getting interested in the potential for Arduinos and so on and so forth. So, yeah, absolutely. I think on a wider scale, really interesting to hear. I think what really came across there is what I've always found with Kleebs, because when you start, you think, oh, yeah, exactly, that they're the people who ban all the experiments, and they do. The key principle of Kleebs is to kind of combat that idea that they're killjoys who are trying to stop practical. And so they have so overcompensated for that. They're so keen to talk to you. They're so keen to help you that they have huge resources available that they've built up over time. And when I was looking through the 10 principles, and if you haven't seen these, we'll put these in the show notes, but the 10 principles for good practical science at schools, which as a science teacher you should be nagging your school ceaselessly to provide for you if they don't already, and you look through and they talk about planned practical science, purposeful practical science, expert teaching, frequent and varied practical science, laboratory facilities and equipment, technician support, real experiments with virtual enhancements, investigative project work, a balanced approach to risk, and assessment fit for purpose. So you look through that, I think at least 7 of those Kleebs can help you with, and they have all of these resources available. It's definitely worth the membership. So if your school isn't a member of Kleebs, they're missing out big time. They're not just a health and safety organisation.
So that list from the Gatsby
Foundation.
Gatsby Foundation, isn't it? Yeah, we've mentioned that before.
Yes.
Yes, and I know it's a membership organisation, and off the top of my head, I can't remember how much it costs, but I've never been at a school that wasn't a member. I think Kleebs, this LEA in that is Local Education Authority, and that's sort of its history, isn't it?
Yes.
So it's very much to support non-fee-paying schools. And if you're a fee-paying school, you can join as an associate member and get all the benefits, can't you? But it started off as for Local Education Authority. I just think of the power of having someone you can ring up and say, look, I've heard about this practical. Is it safe? And they will put someone on it who gets teaching, who will work out how to do it safely and publish it. I think that's so powerful. And I mentioned Hasgards in the chat. Hasgards have been just the saviour of my chemistry teaching over the years. Just brilliant.
Yeah, one of my favourite Kleebs stories was the thing about the radioactive sources a few years ago. People, because of the and these aren't Kleebs regulations, because the regulations about having to have a radiation protection supervisor and this, that and the other, a lot of schools were thinking, well, it's not worth it, we'll just try and get rid of them. And so they were phoning up Kleebs saying, how can we dispose of these safely? And Kleebs immediately, as soon as they got one of these calls, why do you want to get rid of them? Oh, is there anything we can help with? And the number of those sources over the country that they've saved for the school to make sure that those sources are still there for the kids to use and see, just by talking schools through what they need to do, making sure that they're aware that radiation protection supervision is not a particularly onerous task. That it can be part of the
I'm the RPS for my school. You have to be very, very experienced. And no, you don't. This was just a course.
There you go. Thomas is the RPS for school. How hard could it be? So,
boom.
But they've saved, you know, the practical science there for a lot of kids for years to come, basically, because that they're being champions for good practical science in schools.
Yeah, and I think if I remember my RPS course right, I think it's much more expensive to get rid of a source than it is to send a Charlie like me on the course.
Yeah, absolutely. And it can be a professional development. It's a feather in your cap. You know, that's a real thing that you have studied and a qualification that you have. If you're an RPS, you can put that in your PD log for the year. You know, you don't just have to sit in the gym with sugar paper talking about card sorts.
And it's the only time I've made a cloud chamber that works. And I've had one of our listeners sent me instructions to make a cloud chamber, and with the brilliant tip of getting dry ice by using an old carbon dioxide extinguisher, I made it perfectly. It just looked perfect. It didn't work. Still didn't see anything. Very sad.
Oh, yeah.
I may have mentioned that a year ago on the podcast. So I can't remember, but I'd love to know how to make a cloud chamber that worked.
I think Brian Cox does it on one of his.
Yeah,
series.
He uses a fish tank. He's got the BBC behind him. I can't use a fish tank. I thought about getting those welding blades which have got radioactive thorium in them, and they would definitely be emit, and put them in the chamber, then I know I've got something going on there. But
yeah,
but that's low down on my list at the moment. When I start teaching radiation again in a few weeks, maybe it'll come back towards the top.
You can pop into the IOP's headquarters if you're in London, if you happen to be around King's Cross, because they've got a cloud chamber in their reception. It's the coffee table in reception is a cloud chamber.
And the best one I've ever seen, with buttons to press to launch the particles of your choice, is at CERN in Geneva, which is a good link to a shout-out I did on the Twitter thing. I tweeted out, we're planning an episode on visiting CERN. I had a lot of people, thank you very much for your responses. We'll be in touch soon. And we're going to do an episode on taking a school trip to CERN. If you have not replied to that and you want to get in touch with us and tell us your tips for taking a trip to CERN, please tweet us at PhysicsTP, email us, contact@thephysicsteachingpodcast.com.
Or Instagram, physics_teaching_podcast.
Or go to our website, the.physicsteachingpodcast.com, and there's a contact form on every page.
Lovely, yes. And Dave Cotton got in touch. I can't wait to get Dave Cotton on this podcast. It's going to be great. So what a champion of physics that guy is.
And while you're on the website, the.physicsteachingpodcast.com, you can go to our lovely shop, and you won't be able to buy a vacuum cannon because that's closed, that window now. No vacuum cannons for sale at the moment, but you could pick up a delightful t-shirt.
Absolutely, yeah, you missed your chance. If you wanted to buy a vacuum cannon for a loved one this Christmas, sadly that's no longer but the well-dressed spouse will no doubt be sporting the latest Physics Teaching Podcast t-shirt come December the 26th, so don't forget, you can pick those up there as well, yeah.
Yeah, it's delightful when people buy something from the shop, and it helps support the cost of the podcast. Makes us very happy.
Exactly.
So yeah,
and we've sold literally 3 t-shirts.
We've sold more than 3. I think it's nearly in double figures.
So much fun taking them out of physics teachers. They take everything so literally.
That's me. Okay, so I think that about wraps it up. I'd just like to thank Samir from Clinks. I just think Clinks is a fantastic organisation. And thank you for your time, Samir. And I hope we will do an episode on Arduino. I think I'll have to make one before I feel confident doing that.
Yeah, no, thanks to Clinks. And I have to say, actually, because one of the best sessions, I went to a teacher CPD day once, and it was one of those ones where I was late to it, and I was trying to sign up. And the only workshop with slots still available when I signed up was Cleeps talking about health and safety, and I thought, oh well, and that's clearly why they were the last one with spaces available. But it was a joyous session. A guy called Steve Nelms, who is I think actually the chief executive of Cleeps, doing this, and it was just he's brilliant and so entertaining, and anybody who can make 40 minutes on health and safety that entertaining has got to be worth signing up for. So if you ever get a chance to see Steve Nelms talking about Cleeps work, do sign up. Brilliant 40 minutes well spent.
That's excellent. Well, thank you very much, Robin.
Thank you, Thomas.
Speak to you next week.
Will do. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Physics Teaching Podcast with Robin Griffiths and me, Thomas WP. Special thanks this week to Samir from Cleeps. Don't forget to contact us about any of your experiences going to CERN and Geneva. You can contact us through email, contact@thephysicsteachingpodcast.com, or any of the other ways we've mentioned on the podcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you next week.